Welcome back. I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. The Democratic National Convention is underway in Charlotte, North Carolina this week. So today we're going to talk about the Democratic Party, who it represents, what its messages are, and voters' hopes and fears about candidate President Barack Obama, who is seeking a second term. One of our guests argues that the Democratic Party is at odds with itself. John Nichols writes, "The Party of Labor is convening in a city that has erected barriers to union organizing. The Party of FDR, which campaigned against old enemies such as business and financial monopoly, speculation, reckless banking, class antagonism, will complete its 46th convention at a stadium named for a multinational banking and financial services corporation. And the Party of Campaign Finance Reform will decry big money at a convention funded in large part by big money." But the Democratic Party platform for 2012 has just been released, and it includes progressive language around support for gay marriage, abortion rights, and organized labor. So who and what does the Democratic Party stand for? Well, we're going to dive into that with our guests. On the line from Charlotte, North Carolina, at the convention is John Nichols, who writes for politics for The Nation magazine and is its Washington correspondent. Hi, John.
Hey, it's great to be on with you, Holly.
Always good to have you. We're also joined by Lance Selfa, who's a frequent contributor to the International Socialist Review and the author of The Democrats, A Critical History. And he's joining us from Chicago. Hi, Lance.
Hi, great to be with you, too.
And we're also joined again from Charlotte at the convention by Alicia Crank, who's director of the Leadership Mountain View with the Mountain View Chamber of Commerce, and she's a delegate to this year's Democratic National Convention. Are you on with us, Alicia?
I believe I am.
Wonderful. Well, let me start with you and John, who are both there at the convention. What's it like there? What's the mood? And is there anything that's gotten you particularly excited about being there? Go ahead and start with Alicia, and then we'll move to John.
I think for me so far, it's been pretty eventful in a good way. The mood last night that was created at Time Warner Arena was really one of, you know, hope and, you know, empowerment. And it was definitely geared towards women. So I think everyone, even men, walked away with this sense of unity, this sense of we need to work together. And one of my favorite quotes that came out of the convention last night was, I believe it was Mayor Castro, who said that, you know, success isn't a race, it's a relay, and so it can be generational. And I think that really did ring out a lot to people, especially me. So right now the mood is pretty positive. There hasn't been a lot of slanderous comments whatsoever, and I'm looking forward to tonight.
Great. And how about you, John? What are you seeing and noticing there?
Well, I think the first thing that I was struck by, and it really came through even upon arrival at the airport, is that the Democratic and Republican parties really are very, very different parties. And, you know, this happens in many other countries around the world. It has not historically been the case in the United States that they were so radically distinct. But the fact of the matter is, at the Republican convention, it was overwhelmingly, strikingly white and older. And so when you took a picture of the Republican convention, and I did on the floor several times, there you just look as far as you could see, and you saw white faces. Didn't mean that there weren't African-Americans there. Most of them were on stage, but there were African-Americans present at the convention. But the distinction is so radical. The same with gays and lesbians. So many gays and lesbians at this convention. Transgender people actually have a caucus at the convention. Women in a very, very different role here. Much more, not so much present as specific in their statements and demands. And it's just a different thing. And you know, you can have people have their judgments about it. Some people think that's good. Some people think that's bad, whatever. But the bottom line is that's been the really powerful reality that I've felt as I've been at this convention. And I think it also extends to another place, which is that when you are a party of much greater diversity, I think you have greater responsibilities. And so it's a pressure, an internal pressure for the Democratic Party. If it is indeed to be this a party that is much more reflective of what America actually looks like, it faces a bigger challenge because America is a very divided country. It has many, many demands and many, many voices that need to be aired. And so I think it's a much more dynamic convention. The Republican convention had a simple task, presenting its candidates, presenting its very conservative platform. The Democratic convention has not only to present its candidates and its platform, but to reconcile, quite frankly, some of the disconnects, some of the failures as a party in being, you know, a true representative of the whole of its base. And so it's a challenging convention, but a very interesting one to cover.
And so as you're looking at what's in the platform, have they succeeded in actually closing some of those gaps?
You know, it's funny. I think they've done a better job than I would have expected. I read platforms very closely. I think they're to be taken seriously. One of the great lies is to say that platforms are irrelevant. In fact, platforms usually give you a very good sense of where the center of gravity in a political party is. Certainly the Republican platform, extremely right-wing, the most conservative in history. The Democratic platform on social issues is very, very progressive. A real embrace of LGBT rights. The first time ever a major political party endorsing marriage equality. That's a big deal. But also in some other areas, on campaign finance reform, a platform that actually says that they are interested in the idea of a constitutional amendment to overturn the Citizens United ruling and to really begin to get us back to a measure of sanity in how our campaigns are financed. These are good statements on paper. The real question, of course, becomes whether they will follow through and whether the good words will, in fact, become good policies. And in a sense, that's a trust component there. In its first term, the Obama administration, I think, disappointed a lot of people on a variety of areas. Toward the end of that first term, they tried to dot some I's and cross some T's, reach out to the LGBT community with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, marriage equality, reach out to the immigrant rights community with some better language, some better policies, and also, frankly, to say some better things about how we fund our elections. But there are still real gaps there, and I think in particular on, for instance, labor policy. The Democratic Party is you know, officially and in so many ways thought of as the party of labor. And yet this is a party that supports free trade positions that are very much opposed by the labor movement. It's a party that many Democratic governors, including some who spoke last night, have been quite rough on public employee unions in their states. So, again, good words, and the platform actually doing a pretty good job of making connections. But on the policies on that next step, still a little bit of work to do.
Well, and you mentioned corporate financing of these elections, and it was actually Obama who decided not to go the public financing route in 2008 and outspent McCain yep. by quite a lot. There's still a lot of corporate money pouring into this election, although more maybe going to the Republican-backed PACs. But what are you seeing along those lines? I know that you've been critical, Lance, about the corporate control of the party. And in fact, a lot of people have brought up the fact that, you know, the location in Charlotte, North Carolina, that is seen as an anti-labor state by many, Bank of America Stadium, et cetera, that's all controversial even within the Democratic Party.
Yeah, but it's nothing new. I mean, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are two corporate parties, despite the fact that they have different voting bases and different kinds of supporters. I mean, John Nichols is right in terms of the description of who's on the floor at the two different conventions. But behind the scenes, the people that really matter are the ones that give the big bucks, the ones that are hosting all of those parties off the convention floor, the lobbyists, the different interest groups in terms of the corporations. The fact that you're in Time Warner Arena and the Bank of America Stadium is indicative. I mean, that's pretty much a trend across the country of corporate naming of stadiums. But I think it's interesting because finance and telecom are probably the two of the main industries that are often thought of as being Democratic industries, although, as I pointed out in the book, I don't think that you can really make a hard and fast division between the two parties and saying, you know, this set of industries back this party, that's the other. As you mentioned, Obama far outshone McCain in corporate contributions in 2008. And now it appears, at least, that Romney is getting more of the corporate money this time around.
And how much does that affect the way that you look at the party, both you, John, and you, Alicia, who is there as a delegate? This corporate money.
Okay.
Do I have John and Alicia?
No, Alicia's here.
Yeah, thanks.
For me as a delegate, I'm really not seeing any significant flight one way or the other as far as the fact that, you know, we're in this very corporate situation with, you know, being in Time Warner Arena and Bank of America Stadium, even though now we're not going to be using that stadium because of the weather issues. But you know, we're a product of where we're located for the convention, and if we use that type of thinking for, you know, where do we go going forward, as a lot of companies are doing corporate sponsorships of public areas, you know, we'll really be pigeonholing ourselves and saying, oh, we're going to go only places that are traditionally named or doesn't have corporate backing. So there isn't like anything in our delegate packets are, you know, slathered with all of these different corporations. I mean, definitely a lot of sponsors is letting us know that, you know, they're helping to underwrite, but there hasn't been this in-your-face buy this, do that from the major corporations in the area or even in our materials.
And how come you chose to become a delegate? What's your motivation there?
This is for Alicia.
Hi, John. We'll get John in just a minute. Glad to have you back. But Alicia, why did you make the choice to become a delegate? What does that mean to you?
Well, I've been a state delegate since 2007.
Thank you.
This is my first national being a national delegate, and I really wanted to do it because I've seen what's happened over the past 4 years, both good and bad, and I personally just wanted to be a part of it, to be here, to be able to say I'm making this vote, that I'm being accountable for, not only for my district, but just for people that I know and have the same ways of thinking as I do. And being here, you know, when you're a first-time delegate, you can never really imagine what it's like. I mean, there's definitely a rock star mentality because there are, you know, your celebrity politicians, if you will. But you're really being able to have this opportunity to ask direct questions and see how they answer you and see how personable and sincere some of those answers are. Do you have your canned answers versus are they giving you answers that they've really thought about and, you know, tried to implement? An example I'll give you is last night, Labor Secretary Hilda Solis happened to literally, you know, walk past where I was sitting, and she met with people. And I made a point to go talk to her, and I asked her about, you know, what kind of things was the Labor Department really looking at towards helping those in the manufacturing industry, because I grew up in Detroit, so a lot of people that I knew and that were related to me, you know, worked at Ford, GM, and Chrysler and other related manufacturing companies. And she sat there for a second, and she gave me a really great answer that I ended up tweeting out to a lot of people afterwards. And that really meant a lot to me that, one, she didn't just sit out and answer, she thought about it. And then, two, she gave me a solid answer. It was something that I could use and share with other people. So that kind of interaction is what inspired me to be a state delegate in the first place, and to do it on a national level has been as rewarding.
And that's Alicia Crank. She's director of the Leadership Mountain View with the Mountain View Chamber of Commerce, and she's a delegate at this year's Democratic National Convention. She's joining us from Charlotte. Also from Charlotte is John Nichols, who writes about politics for The Nation magazine, and Lance Selfa, who's a frequent contributor to the International Socialist Review, and he's joining us from Chicago. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. And, John, we were talking about the party platform before we lost you.
Holly, before I do it, I just want to tell you, you were just talking on the show about Hilda Solis, Secretary of Labor, and how accessible she is. This is KALW, San Francisco, great station, and she's not going to come on for long, but I'm going to put Hilda Solis on to say hello.
Hello, Secretary Solis.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you? This is Hilda Solis from the great state of California and proud to be associated with our friends in San Francisco.
Wonderful to have you on. What's been the most exciting part of the convention for you so far?
To see our friends. For me, the California delegation. That's my home base. And then just hearing the First Lady last night speaking before the Asian caucus, many people from San Francisco, by the way, and also the Hispanic caucus. I'm going to go speak to the youth caucus and then the veterans and spouses caucus. So I love it. I mean, conventions only come around every 4 years, and this one is very, very important. We've got to get Obama, President Obama, and Joe Biden, our vice president, reelected.
And Secretary Solis, do you feel like what's in the platform regarding labor and employment rights is strong enough? Some of the criticism from progressives is that it's not.
You know, to be honest, I haven't reviewed the text, but I trust the people that are on the steering committee, on the, you know, all the appropriate committees. And you know what? I happen to work for a very fine person who cares deeply about collective bargaining and the union movement. I wouldn't be here in my position. So we've got to work to get him reelected for the betterment of our union families and working class people, and to close that gap between the very wealthy and those that are most vulnerable.
And one of the things that is helping to increase that gap is lower wages and the fact that union protections are on the decline, or some would say. What would you do to support unions and to support workers?
Well, right now we have many tools that are available to us. We investigate through our Office of Labor Management division when there are improprieties and things of that nature. We push back on many of the regulations that the Bush administration left us with as soon as we took office. And we have moved forward in hiring more investigators for the Department of Labor, making sure that we're enforcing all of our Fair Standard Labor Act provisions, and making sure that vulnerable populations know that they have a right to be treated correctly, to be given their minimum wage, their overtime, and going after unscrupulous businesses, especially people who misclassify workers. All of that is a wage theft. So we need to enforce our laws, and we are doing that. So I'm very proud to be a part of this administration and to be able to help this president move our agenda to help every working person who deserves a good job and deserves to be treated with respect and dignity.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Secretary Solis.
Okay. All righty. Thank you so much. I'll turn it back to our friend.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you so much. That was Secretary of Labor Hilda Solis.
John Nichols back again.
Hi, John. Thanks for doing that. Really appreciate it.
Funny, but that gives you a full flavor of how conventions are. Now, it can be good and bad, and there are policy issues and all that, but one of the wild dynamics of a convention that I always think it's important to communicate with there to people is that at the end of the day, conventions are one of those rare places where you're physically in the same spot with most of the power players, not just the politicians, but even some of the finance people Lance has been talking about. You see them. David Koch was a delegate to the Republican National Convention. And as a journalist, I think that's the importance of coming to a convention, that ability to, stop people in the street, to ask them questions. Amy Goodman, of course, has done a fabulous job at these conventions of, you know, confronting people because of that availability. And, you know, the thing with Hilda Solis there is a very interesting thing, because how often do you, you start a show going one way and you could just pop the Secretary of Labor of the United States on and ask a couple of very good questions?
Yeah, we'd like it if you could get, maybe you can get Bill Clinton for us next.
Yeah, I'm looking around. I got my eyes peeled.
Appreciate
lady.
That. In the meantime, let's drill down a little deeper into the party platform. We talked about labor and workers' rights, worker protections. What's in the platform specific to that?
Well, the platform says some pretty good stuff. I mean, it restates the commitment on the part of the Democratic Party to protect labor rights, to its support for collective bargaining rights, expresses respect for public employees that is certainly not in the Republican platform. It's a very, very different platform. But I have to say, this is one of those places where, if we're honest with ourselves, we have to be a little bit frustrated, because while there was great language in the 2008 platform, you simply didn't see delivery on the Employee Free Choice Act, on a host of other labor law changes, and fundamentally on the trade policies, which are so damaging to the interests of unionized workers and non-union workers in the U.S. So the Democratic Party's got a lot to answer for as regards labor policy. By the same token, and I think this is the important thing to understand, this is going to be an odd year, because while it is easy to point out the fundamental flaws and the deep flaws of where the Obama administration has been on labor issues, and we should never shy away from that, I think we also have to recognize that there's some unique stuff going on with the Republican Party. The Republican Party's positioned itself as the most militantly anti-labor major party in the history of the United States. It's never happened. That it's been, you know, a party that is just explicitly desirous of getting rid of the labor movement. And so I think the comparison of the platforms then becomes relatively significant because there is such a stark contrast. So this is, I hope I'm not talking around the issue, because it can sometimes be hard to you know, reconcile these different realities. The political reality that we're about to go into an election where the parties really are positioned in very different places. But then the painful policy reality, I think that's something Lance brings up very well, of that when these guys get in power, even though they're very distinct at election time, they don't always govern differently. And that's something that I think is a complex part of a convention that comes out. Although at the end of the day, at conventions, they sort of err toward the side of this unity thing that at least for a moment, most of the labor people get relatively enthusiastic.
Well, Lance, let me bring you back into the conversation on that point of, you know, you write that that the Democratic Party showed that the renewed and more confident party of 2008 is the latest incarnation of an institution that appeals to the people while looking out for the interests of corporations.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one thing I was thinking there, and maybe John can flag down Hilda Solis again and ask her why the Obama administration made virtually no effort to say anything in relationship to the Wisconsin uprising last year. In fact, when some DNC low-level official tried to put out something, some tepid notion of support for the Wisconsin uprising, the White House apparently came down and said, no, this is going to contradict our view, our sort of sunny optimism about winning the future and our pro-business message that they were trying to push last year before they decided that they would turn around for this year, for the election year, and actually position themselves as fighters for the middle class. So I think that's an example of what I mean when, up until last August, in that debacle over the debt ceiling agreement, Obama was positioning himself as the person who was going to be the responsible individual to cut entitlement programs along the lines of the Simpson-Bowles Commission, which he appointed, or he and leaders of the Congress appointed. And now, for the last year, knowing that his base is not going to respond to that and actually rejected it, and the fact that he's running against somebody like Paul Ryan, has actually done this sort of 180-degree rhetorical flip and talked about supporting the middle class and defending Social Security and Medicare, when you know, and Ryan Lisa reported this in the New Yorker just a couple weeks ago, that the plans are being laid for the Democrats, should Obama get reelected, to actually push through that agreement of cutting Social Security.
I'm going to have to butt in here just because we have a break. You heard from Lance Selfa. He's a columnist for the Socialist Worker. And we're talking about the Democratic National Convention and its platform. We want to take your calls, and I'll give that invitation right after a short break. I'm Holly Kernan. You're listening to Your Call.
This is Your Call on Local Public Radio, a show that depends on engaged listeners. And join today's conversation by calling 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or you can post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org, where you'll also find links related to today's show. And that's where you can sign up for the show's weekly email newsletter. Just click the email newsletter link on the right side of the page at yourcallradio.org.
For For those of you joining us now, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. Tomorrow, we'll have a conversation with Chris Hedges about his new book, Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt. Friday is our media roundtable, where we talk with journalists about the week's news. And today, as the Democratic National Convention is underway in Charlotte, North Carolina, we're talking about the Democratic Party. Where is the Obama coalition today? Who is Obama's base? What does the Democratic Party stand for? And what's in the 2012 platform? How has it changed since 2008, and how are Democrats conveying their message? Is it getting through? And what does it mean to be a Democrat today? You can give us a call at 866-798-TALK. That's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. You can also email us to feedback@yourcallradio.org. And if you identify as a Democrat, how much do you know about the party's platform? How much do you care? And does it influence your party affiliation or your vote? Give us a call at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. And how have you seen the Democratic Party change since 2008? If you've worked on or were supportive of Obama's campaign 4 years ago, what has changed for you in relation to the administration? Are you as excited as before? Are you going to vote? 1-866-798-8255. And what do you want to know about what's in the Democratic platform and what you think should be in it? 866-798-8255 is the toll-free number. And finally, if you don't identify as a Democrat, what do you want to know about it? And what are you making of the coverage of the DNC? 866-798-8255. This is Your Call. We have on the line John Nichols, who writes about politics for The Nation magazine and is its Washington correspondent. He is on the floor of the Charlotte Democratic National Convention. And we're also joined by Lance Selfa, who's a frequent contributor to the International Socialist Review, and he's the author of The Democrats, A Critical History. He's in Chicago. And I know that we were talking about some of the criticisms of this administration right before the break. And the right paints the President Obama as sort of a dangerous socialist, and progressives often see him as a moderate Republican. So where do both of you rank Obama on the scale of American politics in terms of his governance? Go ahead and start, John.
Well, I think that, I was going to ask you to repeat the question. It's kind of kooky, but could you say it one more time?
Yeah, okay, so the right paints Obama as, essentially, I hear this all the time, he's this dangerous socialist. I mean, he's just taking the country to the left of Stalin. And progressives are often criticizing the president for being too moderate, essentially a moderate Republican. Where do you see Obama in the scale of American politics?
I think Barack Obama is the contemporary embodiment of a moderate Republican. Yeah. And I don't think that's hardly a condemnatory term. Remember that moderate Republicans back in the 1960s provided the critical votes to pass the civil rights laws and the Voting Rights Act. You didn't have enough Democrats to do it. You had Southern Democrats who were segregationists and you know, really bad players. And moderate Republicans were also sort of key backers of the consumer movement, of regulation of government, of, you know, frankly, a lot of moderate Republicans are among the first people to speak out against the Vietnam War. And so moderate Republicanism, if we understand it in context, has a relatively noble trajectory. And I think that that's about where Barack Obama is. I mean, he's not a big leftist. He never has been. He has always been a man of, you know, relatively temperate approaches to what you can do with government. He wants government to solve problems, but he certainly hasn't come up with solutions that make government particularly strong. Understand, for instance, that the health care reform, the Affordable Care Act, you know, on paper sounds really good. It's a terrific piece of work, but there's a little bit of a problem with it. It streams money into the insurance companies. It solves, quote-unquote, the health care problem by taking government money and directing it toward insurance companies. That's what we complain about Paul Ryan wanting to do. And so the notion that Barack Obama is some, you know, flaming leftist is a comic notion. And unfortunately, it, that speaks more to the degeneration of the Republican Party than anything else. The one place where I will suggest that Barack Obama is not in and of himself, but is the leader of a party that has genuinely transitioned, is on some social policy issues. The Democratic Party has become an increasingly progressive party when you talk about issues like marriage equality. Its embrace of marriage equality, the president's statements on it, are important. It has become a much more progressive party as regards its confidence in stating support for reproductive women's reproductive rights. You know, in the past, you could have whole Democratic conventions where you sort of danced around the issue. Here, that's genuinely embraced. So there are points where some folks on the hard right of the Republican Party could look at Barack Obama and be very, very uncomfortable. But the notion that it's because he's some kind of sort of socialist or somebody hard on the left is a fundamentally comic notion. Abraham Lincoln was a far more left-wing figure. Teddy Roosevelt was a far more left-wing figure. And I would argue Dwight Eisenhower was a far more left-wing figure than Barack Obama.
And Lance, you're a socialist, or you write for the Socialist magazine. And how do you feel about this kind of where Barack Obama stands in the political landscape? I think you were off the phone, but I was mentioning that you hear the right critique President Obama as a flaming socialist, and progressives critique him as essentially not even a Democrat, but a moderate Republican.
No, I agree with much of what John just said. I think that that is actually pretty close to where he is positioned. And I think the recent article in Harper's by Thomas Frank actually goes through that very well in terms of talking about Obama as somebody who doesn't want to confront corporate power and actually is someone who opens the door for Republican policies to actually come behind him. You know, Republicans have no incentive to deal with Obama if they think that the next day or, you know, the next month, he and his party are going to be endorsing the things that Republicans stood for. I mean, the health care policy that John mentioned, for example, was cooked up. A lot of the ideas of it were cooked up in the Heritage Foundation, where the Republican alternative to Clinton's plan in the early 90s was the blueprint of Mitt Romney's plan in Massachusetts, and then became the foundation of Obama's plan, and suddenly it's denounced by the Republicans as socialism. And so I think that that's a really good example of, John was illustrating about it being him being a moderate Republican in that sense. I mean, Richard Nixon would look like a flaming radical compared to a lot of the policies that Obama's administration has put across. One other thing I just want to say about the social policies is that, though I'm all in favor of major parties finally coming around to things like marriage equality, being in favor of abortion rights and so forth, I think there's two things to say about it. One, well, maybe three. One, it didn't get there because the party wanted it. I think that activists around, especially about LGBT issues, have been pushing on this for the last several years, and so they find the Obama administration and the Democrats finally came around. Second, I'm not so sure that that the abortion language in the platform is going to translate into anything real, because even in the health care bill, for example, there are restrictions put on abortion passed by conservative Democrats as part of their bargain for their vote. And I think that they've run screaming from this issue for years. I'm not so sure. I'll believe it when I see it, that if abortion rights is actually defended. And one other thing is that there's plenty of politicians that are actually willing to sort of grant, to show sort of more social tolerance. They're willing to say they support things like marriage equality or women's rights, while at the same time they're attacking unions, they're carrying out the corporate agenda. Rahm Emanuel supports marriage equality, came out against Chick-fil-A in the mayor of Chicago, but he's actually pushing very hard to provoke here. And I think that's...
To provoke what here?
Provoke a strike of Chicago teachers here in Chicago, and happen next week. So, you know, I think that's all these things have to be looked at in context. And it's unfortunate that what the Democrats try to do is they try to put up this sort of smorgasbord of things. They say, well, you may not like what we do with unions, but you might like what we support on women's rights. But again, the majority of the teachers are women. And if Rahm Emanuel succeeds in what he wants to do to their salaries and benefits, it's going to be an attack on working women.
And John, we have a lot of calls that I want to get to next, but you say that the Democratic Party is at odds with itself. Well, what do you mean when you say that?
Well, I mean, it's best summed up by the fact that this is a party that, you know, I think the average American would sense, certainly after watching this convention, is really ready to crack down on big corporations and go after them and do an agenda that is not anti-corporate, at least challenging a corporation. But now, you know, we're at this convention where, you could probably meet any CEO and, or at least any lobbyist for a corporation in the country. So, you know, you reconcile those two realities, and it is a party at odds with itself. It's at odds with itself, in some deeper ways too. When it speaks about, foreign policy issues, for instance, this is a political party that in 2008, chose Barack Obama because he had appeared at an anti-war rally. I think many, many people would still think of, you know, the Democrats as being a somewhat more anti-war party. And yet, if you look at their platform, it's pretty explicit about a willingness to, get into some sort of deep military entanglement with Iran. That's pretty troubling stuff and things that people should be conscious of, that sometimes the image of a party is not its reality. And also, the surface of the party, what you see at the top versus the grassroots, very, very different. When I walk the floor of the Democratic National Convention, I meet people who are absolutely committed to an exceptionally progressive vision of America, a social democratic vision where unions are very, very strong, corporations are very well controlled, banks are broken up. I mean, it is a vision that is really quite in tune with Franklin Roosevelt, in tune with Harry Truman. And yet, when you look at the reality of Democrats in power, you don't always get that. So when I talk about being at odds with itself, you literally have a grassroots, a base, the people who get this party elected, not necessarily being in the same place as those who do, in fact, get elected.
And here's a related email. Denise in San Francisco writes, why are we not talking about Obama's killing more people with drones than Bush? Why are we not talking about his depriving us of constitutional rights to a fair trial? Why are we not talking about Obama's deporting more immigrants than Bush, et cetera, et cetera? Does anyone want to take that, or shall I go to a call?
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, there's a segment in the book that that I did, the revised segment, that it talks about Obama's foreign policy that actually goes through that. And I think that the main thing I would say to that writer, that questioner, is that she's right, and that it is the case that what Obama has managed to do is to make what liberals thought to be so beyond the pale when George Bush and Dick Cheney were doing it, the drone war, you know, attacks on civil liberties and so forth under the war on terror, and actually make it part of the bipartisan consensus. I think the writer Glenn Greenwald has been excellent on pointing this out. And so I think that that's something that, in fact, last night, I mean, it's funny that a lot of the Republican, I mean, I didn't watch all the Republican convention, but I didn't see a whole lot of sort of military fanfare there, and you would expect that's kind of considered the more bellicose party. And yet last night, half of it was dedicated to you know, talking about a lot of talk about people in Afghanistan and Iraq and supporting the troops and all that sort of stuff, which I think is indicative of where things go. As John,
but that's different than saber rattling, supporting veterans who have been at war.
Oh, sure. I mean, I agree with that, but I think that the fact that they put that out there makes it seem as if they are on the side of the veterans and so on. But if you're on the side of the veterans, you should be against the wars and ending them. But as John mentioned, what's in the platform talks about preparing for war in Iraq, Iran, sorry.
And that's Lance Selfa. His book is The Democrats, A Critical History. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. I'm going to go to calls now. I'm going to give out the number 866-798 866-798-8255. There are no open lines right now, but there will be soon. 866-798-TALK, or you can drop us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org. What does the Democratic Party mean to you, and do you care what's in the platform? Let's go to Ron in San Francisco. Welcome to Your Call, Ron.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for having the conversation. I think the most egregious example of duplicity in the American model right now, biggest fallacy, is that there are two distinct political parties. There really aren't. And I don't understand why people are just tiptoeing around the issue. I have not watched 1 second, nor will I waste 1 second of my time watching these people talk and talk and talk. Everybody knows what the issues are. Everybody knows what the problems are.
Wait. So tell me what they are, Ron.
Damn thing for us. Well, one, I'm black. If there was a president besides Barack Obama who was president with the unemployment numbers that we have in the black community, I'm telling you, it would be outrageous. They would be rioting the streets. This guy has gotten a pass from day one. They came into the office and said, oh, the people who, you know, made this war, made up the lies, we're not going to go after them, blah, blah, blah. It's been one capitulation after another. And in terms of the black community, we should have been seeing when in 2000 the Democrats didn't stand up for the black vote in Florida while there are still people in that party is really beyond me. I mean, because they told us they don't really care what we do. They won't even count our votes if it's not convenient for them.
And Ron,
do anything for us.
My understanding is that you transferred from the Democratic Party to the Green Party. When did you do that?
Right at 2000, when Al Gore stood up and said, George Bush is my president, I went down and re-registered. That was all I needed to hear. Now, I will tell you, and I will admit it, I voted for Barack Obama the first time, and I'm one of the people who cried. My mother, who was born in Alabama, saw from white-only fountains to the advent of rap music. She died before she had a chance to vote for Barack Obama. I actually thought that having a black person would make a difference. It did not.
And Ron,
and I thank Obama for giving me that lesson, because it makes no difference the color of skin of the person occupying that chair. If their programs and the policies aren't helping the people, what difference does it make? None.
So it sounds like you think none of the programs or policies are helping anyone, and that you seem to be saying that there's no difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. Whereas
their office with the bags of money are never told no for an answer. I heard on a show that was much like this show on another station where a Republican said, you know, if Mitt Romney is elected president, we might be thinking of possibly loaning the city's money. The cities are experiencing tremendous financial, you know, problems. We might loan them some money, but it's going to be connected to certain Republican principles, such as, you know, lowering pension funds for state employees, for city employees, and blah, blah. This guy has been in the White House, and he can't see that cities are suffering, and they could have plenty of money to bomb people on the other side of the world, and they can't give any money to the municipalities. And there's always a reason why, yet the people who go in there with a bag full of money leave with everything they want.
Well, thank you for calling.
No.
Ron, thank you very much for calling. I just want to, for the record, state that the stimulus money, a lot of that did go to states and counties and unemployment insurance and keeping teachers employed. So let's welcome now Jackie Sewell. She's a national organizer for the Young Democratic Socialists, and she was one of the young voters who supported Obama in 2008 and is now critical of the Democratic Party. Welcome, Jackie.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being on. So, you know, there's a lot of talk about the youth vote, the so-called enthusiasm gap. It sounds like you embody some of these things. Tell us why you're why you feel critical of the Democratic Party.
Okay. So I guess in 2008, I was 18, and it was my first chance to actually vote in an election. And at the time, I was registering voters in Kansas, and I saw Barack Obama as very different compared to McCain and Palin, And I was really excited about his stance on, like, bringing troops home from the Middle East. He had a positive view on healthcare at the time, and his overall promise of change was really appealing to me. And at the bottom, like, end of the day, it was that, at the very least, I knew that Obama would give the left a better ground to push more progressive reforms than under McCain. But recently what I've, you know, seen more of is that the national leadership of the Democratic Party is not a consistent, credible champion for the interests of the majority. The top of the party serves the interests of its corporate funders over the needs of the party's mass base of trade unionists, people of color, feminists, and other progressives. And you can see that when you look at the way that Obama and his economic advisors have been pandering to Wall Street by extending the Bush administration's bailout of the banks and financial elite without exacting a return and restored strict financial regulation. And the administration also failed to take effective measures against foreclosures and job losses associated with the crisis.
So, Jackie, do you feel like progressives and people who are supporting those causes have done a good enough job to push their agenda with the, is that part of the problem?
I'd say that there are two different things. First of all, I do believe that there is a strong activist movement out there of many different progressives that are trying their best to organize on the streets and engage with elective officials to keep them honest and fair and go with their best interests. But at the same time, when you have corporate money going into politics and influencing the way that politics work rather than just the views of the people, that's where it gets iffy. And that's where a lot of the problems are coming that I see, because the Democratic Party isn't, you know, just listening to the interests of the majority of America.
And do you consider yourself still part of the Democratic Party?
I'm still registered as a Democrat in Kansas, yes.
You're still registered as a Democrat in Kansas. All right, well, so let's take a couple of calls. I'm just going to take them in succession and then get some final thoughts from our guests. Let's go first to Buck in San Francisco. Hi, Buck.
Hi. You know, I got nothing to add to the negative stuff that people have said about Obama. I mean, even on individual rights issues, he does the stuff that's helped white middle-class people. Some stuff on women's stuff. I know all women aren't white, and I know all gays and lesbians aren't white. He sucks on immigration. He's bad on anything that would help black people. I mean, he's just awful. And,
so
you know, I'm supposed to swallow that. You know, I'm not going to work for him. And Van Jones and all the darlings of the left that led us in giving him a pass, the gentleman that called in and said, we should blame ourselves. We said, oh, he's black. He used to be a community organizer. We'll give him a complete pass. And we did, and now we're paying for it.
All right. Well, thank you, Buck. Let me just get one last caller on, and then I'll go to our panel. Philip in Oakland, welcome to your call.
Hi, thank you. I'm voting green this year. It's because I really don't recognize the Democratic Party anymore as my party. It seems to me that ultimately it's come down to we have two corporate-dominated parties who are veering strongly to the authoritarian, favoring corporate interests heavily. The choice comes down to, well, do you want a government that has some sympathy for a safety net, or do you want a government that doesn't? That's what it comes down to me. That's not enough for me. That's not good enough for me. That doesn't represent me minimally. You know, I need some kind of minimal representation for me to feel like it's a legitimate party. So I'm voting green, and I feel like I'm part of a vanguard that wants to restore sort of what democracy, what the Democratic Party used to mean.
All right.
So we're hearing
a lot of that. Thank you, Philip. All right, so we just have a couple of minutes. I want to get final thoughts from each of you. We heard from a number of people who are very disillusioned with the Democratic Party and who seem to be saying that they don't see a difference between the parties when many analysts are saying there's a bigger difference this year than in many years past. Let's get some final thoughts responding to that, starting with you, John Nichols. Are you there, John? He's off looking for Bill Clinton again. John, are you there? All right, how about you, Lance?
Oh, a couple things. One thing that about I think that struck me about this conversation, especially when you're talking about the platform and so forth, is a quote that came from the conservative pundit David Frum talking about Bill Clinton. Mentioned it, I know I mentioned in the book, is that a long quote, but it basically ends up with saying the left gets words, the right gets deeds. That was the essence of Clintonism. That's the essence of Obamaism, I think. And you know, there's always a difference between the two parties. There's always, and the Democrats in this election are going to pose themselves as a lesser evil to the Republicans. But I'm with the voters that are, and the people who are saying, you know, we want more than that. We want more than just not being as bad as the Republicans. We actually want to make some positive change in our lives. And I think that the only way to do that is outside the Democratic Party.
And Jackie, let me, sorry to cut you off there, Lance, it's just we're running out of time. Can I just get your final thoughts? You've got about 30 seconds.
Sure. In order, like, for the Democratic Party to actually serve their base, they're going to have to work on more than just social issues. While they're really important social issues like reproductive rights and marriage equality, like, they're still going to have to stop serving the interests of the 1% and corporate funders and push progressive reforms. And as a young person, I feel like we need to engage with elective officials in between elections. We can't just vote and that be it. That means we have to build the left and actually make mass social movements by working in coalitions to further those progressive reforms.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that. That was Jackie Sewell. She is a national organizer for Young Democratic Socialists, and she was one of the voters who supported Obama in 2008 and is now more critical of the president and the Democratic Party. We were also joined by John Nichols, who's the author of The Genius of Impeachment, Jews for Buchanan, and a biography of Vice President Dick Cheney, Dick, the man who is president. And we were also joined by Lance Selfa, a columnist for the Socialist Worker newspaper and author of The Democrats, A Critical History. We'll put a link to a lot of web resources about the DNC, including the platform, at our website. It's yourcallradio.org, and you can also post comments there. Thanks for joining us. Thank you for your calls and emails. Apologies that we couldn't get to all of them. I'm Holly Kernan, and here's what's coming up tomorrow.
How is corporate capitalism affecting poor communities and the environment? On the Next Year Call, we'll have a conversation with Chris Hedges about his latest book, Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt. Hedges says when everything becomes a commodity that you exploit until exhaustion or collapse, you eventually destroy human capital. And that's already happened to the working class. So is it time to revolt? Join us at 10 or email feedback at yourcallradio.org. It's Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you.